Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. Today, my guest is Colonel William Richardson. He has written a memoir called Valleys of Death, a memoir of the Korean War. He joins us by telephone from North Carolina. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you, Vic. We're a little bit chilly down here today.
Are you now?
That's
unusual in North Carolina, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is, but we're getting a blast. And I'm very happy to be able to talk to you.
This book was a long time coming, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't on my mind very much. I was just trying to live my life and move on. And I for the longest time, I really didn't think it was anything special. I had a lot of people over the years tell me I ought to write the book, and they really didn't know that much about it. So I just stuck it in the back of my head and said, someday, maybe. And then about 5 years ago, I got a call from David Halberstam. He was writing the book, The Coldest Winter. And he got a hold of me, and I've become friends with him over the next couple of years, and he told me I need to get with it and write a book. So that's kind of really, he's kind of the one that really jolted me into doing this.
Well, he was an amazing writer.
Yes, he was, and it was a shame that accident happened to him just before the Coldest Winter was published.
And so that really kind of gave you a little jump start there, didn't it? Having someone like that kind of give you a little push.
Yeah, that's right. It was a long time before I knew who he was. I had talked to him a number of times, and I just never even put it together. I decided that I liked him, talking to him, and that I would continue to give him any information I could. He was doing a book on the 24th Division, but he said that the Unsan battle that took place at the 8th Cavalry Regiment kept drawing him away. Mm. And that's when he got a hold of me. Somebody told him about me, and he got a hold of me and asked if I would help him on developing the Unsan battle. And I said yes, and he said, "I'll get back to you." And it was almost a year before he got back to me. But when he did get back to me, he knew more about me than I knew. So we went on from there.
The man did his research, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly did.
Colonel Bill Richardson joins us. He's written a memoir called Valleys of Death, a memoir of the Korean War. You grew up in Philadelphia, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yes.
And you joined the Army? Ended up in Korea 60 years ago.
Yeah, well, I joined the Army 4 or 5 years before that and went to Europe. And then 60 years ago, I wound up in Korea. You're correct.
And this is your story, and it's told in a very matter-of-fact kind of way. My dad was in the Marine Corps in the Pacific in World War II, 2nd Division, and he could never talk about it. And so to hear you talk about this stuff, it struck me as something that probably wasn't that easy to do.
Well, I didn't have any problem. I have never had any problems over the years. I have some friends, former POWs here, that they all have nightmares and all kinds of things, and I tell them, hey, I don't have nothing. I never have dreamt about Korea since I got back. And they tell me, oh, you're full of it, Bill. But I'm not. I never did. I never had any trouble talking about it. And I for the last 10 years, I've been speaking out at Fort Bragg, the special operations people. They go through a 3-week training there that they wind up in a prison situation. And I I speak to them, and I've never had any problems, you know, telling them exactly what I went through and what they may go through and how they can best cope with it.
How old are you now?
I'm 81.
And you're living in North Carolina. You're retired after, how many years were you in the military?
39 plus.
Okay. And you talk in the book about the trip that ended up taking in Korea. You're going cross country on a train, and you're not supposed to have beer.
Yeah. Well,
you figured out a way to get some, though.
Yeah.
Didn't you?
Oh yeah. We were stopping on the different stations and getting out on the platform and doing PT and, you know, physically trying to keep ourselves in shape while we're on the train.
Uh-huh.
And we get talking to guys, people on the platform, either waiting for another train or just there because we're going through with troop trains. We had three trains, separate trains going through. And, you know, we talked to them, and the first thing you know, we were asking some of these younger guys, hey, how about getting us some beer? And they'd run off in their car and come back with a couple of cases, and when we'd stash them on the train. Of course, I was an NCO. I was supposed to be keeping things like this from happening, but you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
You ended up going out to San Francisco, didn't you?
Yes.
And that's where you ended up sailing to Korea?
Yeah, we left there and went to Korea. We were on a troop transport ship, Pope, and they'd just taken it out of the mothballs, and the ventilating system wasn't working.
Uh-huh.
So it was really hot, but after two or three days, they got the ventilating system working, and it was a normal trip. You eat two times a day. By the time you get done eating lunch, they got to start, eating breakfast, they got to start making supper. So we had three infantry battalions and three artillery battalions and an air defense battalion on there. So we were pretty well stoked there with people. And two meals a day in that environment's plenty.
So you eat breakfast and you get right back in line for dinner, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's a normal troop ship operation.
Yeah, you know? Okay.
Yeah.
Colonel William Richardson has joined us. He's written a memoir called Valleys of Death, a memoir of the Korean War. You get to Korea. How long did you think it was going to last?
Well, I'll tell you, when we were going over there, we didn't think it was going to last long at all. You know, we thought this would be over in a hurry. But on the way there, we were getting the news reports, and things started looking darker and darker. And we realized before we got there that we were in some trouble. We got the word that the North Koreans had crossed the Nakdong River, you know, if we're defending along a river line and the enemy's on the other side, you're in serious trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the situation when we got there. At that point in time, we didn't think we were going to be out of there very fast, I'll tell you.
And before you knew it, you were in the thick of it.
Oh, yeah. We were, you know, only it took us a couple of days to unload the ships and then we moved by train to Daegu, just north of Daegu, and that was where the division reserve area was, and we unloaded the trains about one day, and the next day the 8th Regiment only had, it was, the thing you got to know is that the Army was in very bad shape at this time. Divisions had regiments in them that only, where they're supposed to have three battalions, had two battalions. They're supposed to have three battalions or four battalions of artillery. They only had two. And it just, all of the divisions were just hollow. And so the 8th Regiment had been up on line with just two battalions all this time and had been beat up pretty bad. So we weren't in the regimental reserve area, but about a day, and we were ordered to go up, and the North Koreans had broke through the 2nd Battalion, and we moved quickly on trucks, and that was it. We were in it.
And you describe in your memoir the battles that you were in and these hills that you were fighting for, and how the lines kept breaking down. One minute you're in front of the line, the next minute you're behind the lines.
Oh, yeah, that was the Pusan perimeter. The battle in the Pusan perimeter was like being on a merry-go-round. You kept going from one place to the other and going nowhere. I'd come back to hills that I and found the same hole that I'd been in 2 days before. It was just trying to keep the North Koreans off balance we were outnumbered quite a bit, and the only way we could do it was just keep moving around, keep them off balance. So we'd attack, take a piece of ground, defend it that night, next day withdraw, move across the road, attack another hill, defend that at night, and that just back and forth, and almost within a very small area, and that just kept on for days and days.
We get about two-thirds of the way in before you get to the point where you've been in all these battles, and you've lost a lot of men, and you get cut off from the main force.
Well, it happened two times. It happened right at the beginning. The second day we were in combat, we moved out about 4 or 5 miles and got caught back that far ahead of our lines and got trapped back there, but we got out. It was just my company, and the whole company got out of there. But later on in the war, after we took the capital of North Korea and then moved up to this town called Unsan, which was 60 miles south of the Ula River, that's when 500,000 Chinese came across, and that's where my whole battalion got trapped in there. The other two battalions, we were ordered to hold. The other two battalions got out. They got beat up pretty bad, too. But in the meantime, nobody was admitting that there were any Chinese there.
Only 500,000 of them, huh?
Yeah, that was one of the big problems. People were reporting this, but nobody was listening. And that's when we really got trapped, and my battalion lost about 650 men in there. And the end result, after fighting day and night in a perimeter about 300 yards in diameter, we got out with roughly 60 men and tried to make it back to our lines. We moved for one night and a day, and we were approximately 21, 22 miles behind the lines. And then we ran into Chinese troops in the rear area, and we kept running into them and bouncing off of them until they had us zeroed in their rear area so well that they were able to fire mortar fire on us. And the next thing I knew, I was standing on the hill, and there were only three guys with me. We ran off the hill, the three of us, and about I don't know, just a couple of minutes later, we run down alongside a road, and we ran right into two Chinese, skipping along and holding hands, and one guy had a chicken, and we ran into him like about 10 feet apart, and they were as surprised as we were. I shot the guy with the chicken, so you can see where my mind was at that time. Mm-hmm. And the guy behind me shot the other guy who was getting his weapon leveled at us, and we kept running down that road, and I saw a tank about, 200 yards away, and it had a big white star on it. It was one of our tanks, and I said, holy God, we must be closer than I thought, and I started running down. You know, all this was, this is the results of 7-8 days without sleeping, and your mind is just not working right. We kept running towards the night, and it didn't take me long to realize, what am I doing? That tank is knocked out, probably been knocked out for days. And about that time, we had about 12 Chinese chasing us. We made a quick right turn, went across the road and through a little Korean village, and on the other side there was an open rice paddy about 450 yards wide, and then on the other side the hills started straight up, and we started running across there with them chasing us, and we'd stop, fire at them, and then move and fire at them and move, and they were right on us. We got to the other side, and we got behind a dike, and I thought to myself, if we can hold these 12 off, we got a good chance, because I didn't see any other Chinese troops behind them, so maybe if we could knock them out, we'd have it made. But about that time, the other two guys with me ran out of ammunition. I had a Chinese weapon. I didn't even have my own weapon because we were so low in ammunition. I had picked up a Chinese weapon, and I told the other two guys to take off up the hill. They just looked at me, and I said, take off, get the hell out of here, boom. So they ran up, and I stood there and fired up the Chinese a little bit, slowed them down, and fired them up again, and then I ran out of ammunition, and I didn't know by this time we were in eyeball-to-eyeball range, and I looked around, and to my right there was a small Korean house, and up behind that in a dugout, and a little hole dug into the hill, was a woman and a baby, and they were crying and wailing, and I said, if I run over there and go in that house, she's going to tell them I'm in there. And then I looked and I saw a chimney that had fell down off the end of the house. And I said, I'll run over there and get in that chimney. But it was only about 8 inches by 8 inches. and then I saw a water buffalo laying down. I said, I'll crawl beside that water buffalo. All these crazy things ran through my head. And finally I ran back behind the house and then up the hill so they couldn't see me. Well, I was going part way up the hill. I went so far as I knew I couldn't go any further because they would just shoot me up. I mean, they would have been like shooting ducks in a gallery there. But I jumped in a bush, and so I was off to their left, and they come running up, going up the hill, and hollering and jabbering and. And I thought, God, I'm home free here. Geez, just a few more minutes, and I'm gonna be able to get the hell up and run, the other way, away from them. And every unit has one. Anybody that's been in the military knows there's always one guy that can't keep up, and here comes a straggler, and he sees me. And he starts hollering at the rest of them and comes over, and I was laying my face down with that burp gun under me, and he jabbed me with he had a rifle with a bayonet on it and jabbed me right in the left cheek, right down to my bone, right down to the bone in my rear end. And to this day I say that I didn't move, didn't do anything, but I don't know what I did. I don't really know what I did. But I know the next thing, they were all around me. I looked around, and all these feet were all around me. And I said, if I just roll over with this burp gun, they're going to shoot me up. And I had no ammunition. I had nothing. I think the burp gun was my Linus's blanket at that time. And I just... I spread my arms along the ground, rolled over, and there they were all looking down, these little guys looking down at me. They grabbed me up, run me down the bottom of the hill, and a guy, Chinese, with red piping down his pants leg, which later I found out was an officer. I didn't know what the hell he was. Run up to me and started hollering at me and screaming at me, and I didn't know what he was saying. And I had my back to the hill, and he was pointing up the hill. And the next thing I know, he took out his machine pistol, racked it back, and put it between my eyes, and it looked like the business end of a 105 howitzer, you know. And still screaming at me, and I lifted my shoulders up and dropped them like, you know, I don't know. I don't know. And he looked at me. He looked at me and squinted his eyes up. He took the pistol and rammed it back in his holster and grabbed me and pushed me and kicked me in the rear end and started running me across the rice paddy. And I took a few steps and my legs got a little rubbery and I realized what was happening to me. And that was kind of it. I've thought of that moment many, many times, and I came to realize that what was going through my mind. I think I must have realized if he pulled the trigger, I would never know it. You know,
uh-huh.
I wouldn't. I think that's what made me react the way I did. But reacting that way, I think, saved my life. So. That was it. Then I was off to my prison days.
In case you've just tuned in, my guest is Colonel Bill Richardson, and we're talking about his memoir, Valleys of Death, the memoir of the Korean War. And you spent almost 3 years as a prisoner of war, and you were captured in November of 1950.
Right.
And you were in there for 34 months until the, did they call it an armistice?
Correct. No, well, it was a peace, it wasn't an end of a war. The war never ended over there.
It's still going on, isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, your experiences in prison are just really something to read about.
They're It was interesting.
Yeah, well, at one point you just said to yourself you weren't going to think about dying anymore.
No, when I fell into the sled trench, the latrine, when those two guys saved me, pulled me out, and I was laying there and I lost control of my bowels And I said to myself for a second, I can't handle any more of this. I can't do it. And as fast as I said that to myself, I said, no, wait a minute, you that's not right. You're not going to give up. And that's from that day on, I never thought again about dying. Matter of fact, that's the only real time that I thought about dying. And the point there is that you got to control your mind. I mean, your mind can tell you a lot of things, and if you got to know who's in charge. And I mean, it just gets. I've watched guys just die, just lay down and die, and because something in their mind told them they couldn't handle it anymore, and that's what they did, you know. I believe your strength is in your mind, and you can take care of some pretty bad things if you just got control of that old brain up there and make it function for you.
Well, we'll leave it to your readers to read about all the details of that experience. And at that point, that was really a turning point for you because you were in a place where no one ever came back, and you were badly hurt, and you rehabilitated yourself and got back to a position where you could get out of there. And an amazing thing happens a little bit later. You're talking to a guy. I think you'd moved to another location. you're talking to a guy, I think he was from Philadelphia, and he pulled out a photograph of his girlfriend. That's the most amazing story.
Yeah, that's pretty good. he pulled out a picture of his girl. But this was in the last camp. I was in five camps, and this is the last camp I was in. And there, you know, whenever you went to another camp, you looked for guys. Hey, anybody in here that, from Philadelphia or Pennsylvania or something, you know? And so we found three or four guys, and we were sitting around, and this guy, unusual, that he had a wallet and everything. And he says, I got a picture of my girlfriend, and he pulls it out and passes it around, and it was a half a picture. And I looked at it, and when it got to me, and I said, you know who's on the other side of that picture, on the other half? He said, hell no. I said, well, I do. He said, what? You're full of it. You're full of it, Rich. And I said, no, I'll tell you what. The girl on the other side of that photograph there is the daughter of my father's girlfriend. And that picture was taken when I was home in June, before I went to Korea. My father and I had gone on a Sunday to her house, to his girlfriend's house, so I could meet her children and everything. We had dinner, and we went outside and took pictures. And the young lady on the other side of that photograph was the oldest in that family, and I'm the oldest in my father's family, so they said, the two oldest get together. So we did, and took that picture. And when I come home, when I come home on the tarmac to the Philadelphia airport, she came walking up to me, and that started a new part of my life.
Mm-hmm. You're still with her, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Right.
Yeah.
Almost 57 years here.
Well, that's a great story, Bill.
Oh, it was. It was. I said to her, she walked up to me, I said, oh, my God, this is, of course she had changed, you know.
Uh-huh.
She had changed quite a bit and said, good-looking blonde walking up to me, and she said to me, you don't remember me, do you? I said, I remember you, but there's been some changes made.
Your book is Valleys of Death, a memoir of the Korean War. It's written by my guest today, Colonel Bill Richardson. And, Bill, we wish you a happy holidays.
Well, I appreciate it very much, Vic, the chance to talk to you. I really appreciate it.
It's been our pleasure.
And I hope you all have good holidays, too.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Hopefully you've seen my recent columns in the Dayton Daily News and Springfield News Sun, where I picked out my favorite books from last year. And it's time to do that for you here on The Book Nook. Tune in next week when I'll bring you excerpts from my two favorite interviews from 2010. One is for a nonfiction book and the other is for fiction. That's right here on WYSO. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.